holding Moed Katan, first chapter, the sixth Mishnah. En chofrin kuchin ukvarot b'moed. Our Mishnah discusses what preparations we may make in the burial plots when we don't have a dead person in front of us. So ordinarily, every city would have a few graves ready in the event that someone would die. So the Mishnah says that on the Moed, on Chol HaMoed, one may not dig two types of graves. One is called a kuch, another one is called a kever. Kuch is the graves they used to dig in the walls of caves. Like today, if you go in Israel to visit many of the graves of the Tanaim, they show you that in the walls of caves they had these, they would carve out a grave and they'd bury the person there. So that's a kuch. And the kever is in some kind of building. They used to build a building out of stone or cement or something, and in the wall they would bury the person. So one may not dig these two out on Chol HaMoed, neither a kuch nor a kever. Aval mechanechin et hakuchin b'moed. But let's say you have a kuch that's ready, and that kuch was prepared for someone that's tremendously obese, very, very big. And you realize that that person got better, he's not going to die, and you want to fit it the size to the average person. You don't need such a big grave. So that you're allowed to do on Chol HaMoed, to make it longer, shorter, wider, thinner, that you could do. That's not such hard work. Being that's not such hard work, and the public needs to have certain graves ready, so you could fix it up on Chol HaMoed. Ve'osin nivrechet b'moed. And one may make a nivrechet on Chol HaMoed. Now, nivrechet, no one really knows what it is. There are different opinions what a nivrechet is. We know it has something to do with digging. But what exactly is it? So, one understanding is that it's a grave like we have today. That you dig out of the ground, some earth, and you have a plot ready. That's one understanding. Because that's not as hard work as digging out from the wall. One understanding says that it's some kind of path they used to make for the water to flow out of the yard. And you have too much water in your yard. And the third understanding is that it's some kind of pit you made in your yard to collect water in to do laundry. So either way, it's something that's not difficult to dig. And it was dug in the yard. Well, either in the yard or in the graveyard. So one may make a nivrechet, whatever a nivrechet is, on Chol HaMoed. The aron, and if one wants to build a casket for the dead person, the aron, so then you're going to be banging, you're going to be cutting, it's a lot of noise. So the first opinion in our Mishnah says you're only allowed to build an aron imamit mechatzel. If you have the dead person in the yard, so then everyone who sees you banging and building on Chol HaMoed knows you're doing it for that dead person. But if the dead person isn't in the yard, then you can't build that one. Rabbi Yehuda Oser, Rabbi Yehuda forbids one from cutting pieces of wood and assembling an aron on Chol HaMoed. Ela im ken yesh imo nesarim. Unless you already have cut pieces of wood from before Yom Tov. He says, I don't let you cut the wood to size on Chol HaMoed. It's not a big deal to go out and buy the right size wood. That's not work you have to do on Chol HaMoed. So Rabbi Yehuda says, I don't let you make this aron unless you have the slabs of wood prepared from before. Or if you get slabs of wood that are the right size. But you can't start cutting wood to be the right size. What?
But what's the deal? I mean, people are so different sizes to...
Yeah, but they put together pieces of wood anyways in order to bury them. So instead of cutting up wood, you could go buy wood. Look at me and you. We're two different sizes.
Okay, but even then, I mean, today they don't make a change. They use the same thing.
Are you sure?
I think.
It's not what I heard.
Yeah?
I don't know. I heard that there are different sizes, even today in caskets.
Ooh.
I don't remember. I can.
Okay.
About a month ago, someone was telling me, there was a question how much they wanted to pay for the casket, and part of it had to do with size. That's what I remember hearing. I don't remember. Now, it's interesting that this halacha was relevant in their times. Today, we say that you don't need to have the dead person in the yard. This is what's brought in the later day achronim, because everyone knows it's when someone died. It's famous. That's what's brought in the achronim from 100, 200, 300 years ago. They say that in our times, we live in small towns, and everyone knows when someone dies, and if you're building a casket, everyone knows what you're doing it for. I think that today, we go back to the din of the Mishnah. Nowadays, no one knows if someone died. You hear, yeah, someone died, but if you see someone banging and building a casket in his yard, you have no reason to connect that with maybe what you heard that someone died. We live in big cities again. Another interesting point is that we have a rule that even on Yom Tov, ordinarily we say there's no difference between Yom Tov Rishon and Yom Tov Sheni. You're not allowed to do Melacha on Yom Tov, be it the first day or the second day, even though the second day is a rabbinic institution. Now, when you have the first 2 days of Pesach, so the first day is Pesach. The second day, second Yom Tov, is a rabbinic institution. So, nonetheless, we say that we're forbidden from doing Melacha, like on the first day. But there's an exception. We say, let's say a person passes away, and he has to be buried, sorry. So then, the Halacha says that Yom Tov Sheni, Kechol Shavyu HaRabanan, that our sages said, on the second day of Yom Tov, we're very lenient for the sake of burying a dead person. The first day of Yom Tov, we can't be lenient. That's the Torah says you have to keep. But the second day, being that it's a rabbinic institution, so our sages said that you could be far more lenient, you could do a lot of work in order to get the person buried on the second day of Yom Tov. So even though on Yom Tov itself, the second day of Yom Tov, our sages were very lenient and they let us do a lot of work in order to get the guy buried, nonetheless, they said, you want to build the casket to bury him, so that Rabbi Yehuda says you could only do if you have cut pieces of wood. That much I'm not going to let you do, even on Chol HaMoed, which is far more lenient. Chol HaMoed, you could do much more. Mishnah Zayin.
That speaks about Chutz La'aretz, because...
Yeah, talking about Chutz La'aretz. En nose'in nashim pamoed. We don't marry women on Chol HaMoed. Lo betulot, regardless if this is the first time this girl is getting married, she's a virgin. Velo almanot, nor do we marry a woman who's a widow. Velo meyabemin, and we don't either do yibum, which is when a person passes away without children, so there's a mitzvah for his brother to marry, to take in his wife. Even that we don't do on Chol HaMoed. Why? Mipnei shesimcha ilo. Because we consider it an exceptional simcha. And we have a rule, en ma'avin simcha b'simcha. The Torah says, v'samachta b'chagecha, that on the holiday, our happiness should be focused and stemming from the holiday and not from external sources. And when a person gets married, his focus is going to be on the happiness of his marriage. So therefore we say, focus on the simcha of the holiday during the holiday, and after the holiday or before the holiday, you could get married and be focused on the simcha of getting married. Now, being that that is the reasoning, that we don't want to have an interference with the happiness of the holiday, so we could understand the ordering of the Mishnah. The Mishnah said you can't marry women on Chol HaMoed. Not virgins, where that's the classical marriage, where a person is extremely happy, he's marrying a girl, it's the first time they're getting married. So Mishnah says that you can't do on Chol HaMoed, because that's mixing one happiness with the other, and ma'avin simcha b'simcha. V'lo almanot, nor a widow. When one marries a widow, there's less happiness than when he marries a girl who's fresh and it's the first time she's getting married. Even that, the Mishnah says, you may not do on Chol HaMoed. V'lo miyabmin, and one may not take in his brother's wife after his brother passes away without kids, where over there she's an almana. And it's worse than that. She's not only an almana, but you have a special mitzvah to take her in. It's not an almana that a person dated and he said, gee, I'd love to marry her, she's a great person. It's his brother's wife, he passed away. So the Torah gave him a special mitzvah to take her in. So you think, this is a case where, how much happiness is there? And not only that, there's a special mitzvah to marry her. So maybe that should override Chol HaMoed. So the Mishnah builds up and says, even this, one may not do on Chol HaMoed, because at the end of the day, it is a source of happiness for him. And on Chol HaMoed, we say, be focused on enjoying and being happy for the holiday. But what one may do is remarry the woman who he divorced. Because we say how much happiness is there. There was a rabbi not too long ago who divorced his wife and remarried her. So someone asked him, what happened that you divorced her and what happened that you took her back? So he said, look, when I first married her, so she was my wife. As a wife, you know, I couldn't put up with certain things. But after we got divorced, so I knew I had to, I wouldn't get such a good shidduch on the second time around. So for the second time around, she's okay. Our Mishnah says that when a person remarries the woman we divorced, there's a special mitzvah for a person to remarry a woman after he divorces her.
Yeah.
Torah says, so long as she didn't get married to someone else in the interim, he has a mitzvah to take her back. On the one hand, a person's allowed to divorce his wife. On the other hand, the Torah says he has a mitzvah to remarry her. So that remarriage, we say, is not going to be so happy. That you could do on Chol Moed. V'osai shatach shiteha b'moed. A woman may do her jewelry on Chol Moed. What does that mean? She can adorn herself. She could put on eyeshadow. She could comb her hair. She could put makeup on her face. She could do a china. You know what a china is? The Sephardim have a custom that they take a special type of mud and they put it on their face and they put it on their hair, and then it makes their hair all yellow and it makes their face all red. So I don't know if that's exactly what the Mishnah is referring to, but the Gemara says there's a special type of mud they used to put on their face, and it used to make them look like their faces were red, and that was considered beautiful. So even that, she could do. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, lo tasud, she may not put sid on her face, which they used to do, and then they'd peel it off, and it would take off all the hair and make the skin soft and beautiful. So Rabbi Yehuda said, yeah, but she can't walk around with that plaster on her face or on her body to remove her hairs. Because that's disgusting. Chol Moed, she's walking around with plaster all over. Our sages said, yeah, it's true that it's disgusting when it's on, but when she takes it off, then it removes all her hair and makes her skin soft and beautiful, so that she considers beauty, and that makes her happy. So our sages said, even though it's nivul right now, but it's going to make her happy in the future. Mishnah Ches.
It means it's allowed.
Our sages say it's allowed. Rabbi Yehuda says it's forbidden. Notice that as we go along, Rabbi Yehuda, time and again, has the more stringent opinion. Okay. In the Mishnah we saw, Mishnah Vav, he said you could only build the casket if there's a dead person in the field, in the yard. And over here he says the woman may not put on plaster on Chol Moed. And throughout Shas, we find that Rabbi Yehuda is the more lenient, the more stringent opinion. It's interesting that the one who argues with him time and again is Rabbi Shimon, otherwise known as Rashmi, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Stam Rabbi Shimon in the Mishnah. And throughout the Shas, almost always Rabbi Shimon is the lenient opinion. I don't learn much Zohar, but they say that in the Zohar, Rabbi Shimon is very stringent. But in the Mishnah, he's very lenient. Mishnah Ches, Ha Hedyot. The average person. Hedyot means someone who's not a professional. Tofer kedarko. If he needs to sew something for Chol Moed, he has a tear in his pants. So we say, on Chol Moed, one is not allowed to do professional work. So, if he's not a professional, we say, let him sew the pants up the way he knows how, because he's not going to do such a good job. So, that's not considered professional work, what he does. So he could do it ordinarily on Chol Moed. The Oman, but a professional, Machliv. We tell him, do it like a dog's teeth. You ever see a dog's teeth? They jut down, they go up. So we tell the professional, if you're going to do it, that's doing professional labor on Chol Moed. You're not allowed to do professional labor on Chol Moed. So Ha'oman, Machliv. He could only sew up something if he's going to purposely see to it that the stitches aren't straight. One's going to go down, one's going to go up, so he doesn't do professional labor on Chol Moed. Sargin et hamitot, Rabbi Yossi Omer, af mematchin. We're permitted to Okay, let's introduce this. Mm-hmm. Their beds were woven of different strings. That's what, how their beds were made. I'm going back to about 100 years ago. The beds were strings. When you tell a person sleep tight, so that stems from the fact that they used to tighten the strings before they went to bed so that their bed wouldn't sag. That they used to sleep on some kind of mattress on strings. So the Mishnah says that one may put the strings through, and Rabbi Yossi says you could tighten them. And there are different versions over here. What does Rabbi Yossi mean? Does he mean you could even tighten them? Or Rabbi Yossi says no, you could only tighten them, but you can't put the strings through. If the strings weren't there from before Yom Tov, you can't put them in on Yom Tov. Different understandings, depending on what version you have of Rav Yossi. Mishnah Tet. We're holding the first chapter, Mishnah Tet. You want a Mishnayot? You want a Mishnayot? Just be careful not to move the string, okay? Mishnah Tet.
Yoma?
No, Moed Katan. And then.
Huh?
Moed Katan.
Oh, Moed Katan, that's in the back.
Yeah.
Very bad.
In our sages' time, the way they used to bake and cook was they would have a tanur. And a tanur is an earthenware vessel that goes in a diagonal. You had a big fire on the bottom. And on top, you'd put the pot. So this was a vessel which was movable, and they would attach it to the ground when they wanted to use it. And you had a big fire on the bottom, and you could cook things on top. So we're holding the first chapter, Mishnah Tet, the ninth Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Mamidim, one could set up tanur, this type of oven, v'chiraim, and another type of oven is the oven that's called kiraim. And I should be careful not to move this. V'rechaim, some have the version that we're also talking about setting up a mill, some kind of hand mill. Bamoed. We could establish that, these, set them up and attach them to the ground so that they're standing firmly on Chol HaMoed, because we need to use them on Chol HaMoed. So the Mishnah says you could set them up. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, "En mechabshin tarechaim batechila." What one may not do on Chol HaMoed is if you have the handmill, and part of the handmill is the wheel or the piece that has jutting edges to break down the whatever it is you're grinding. So Rabbi Yehuda says you can't take the chisel and chisel out the parts that are supposed to be sticking out, and the whole idea is it's uneven, right? You're supposed to grind things with it, so it has to have jutting edges. So they chisel out pieces so that it had jutting edges. So Rabbi Yehuda says one may not chisel them out on Chol HaMoed. On Chol HaMoed, you can't start chiseling them out. Let's say you had them chiseled out, but they wore thin, so then you could make them stick out a little bit more. You could chisel a little more. But if you're starting, if it's batchida, this is the first time you're taking a flat piece and you're chiseling out so that there'll be jutting edges, so that Rabbi Yehuda says is forbidden. Yeah? So let's recap what we see today. We saw that we may not prepare the graves on the walls of caves or in the walls of buildings on Chol HaMoed, but we could make them wider or thinner or longer or shorter. We saw that we may make a nivrechet, and we saw three different opinions whether a nivrechet, what kind of hole it is, whether it's a grave in the ground or something else. We saw that we may make a casket only if the dead person is in the yard, and Rabbi Yehuda says you're not allowed to cut the wood to size. We saw you're not allowed to marry women on Chol HaMoed, but one could remarry his divorced wife. And we saw that women could beautify themselves on Chol HaMoed. Rabbi Yehuda forbids them to put the plaster on their face. Because it says, even though in the long run it'll make her happy, it'll make her beautiful, in the short run it's disgusting for her. We saw that when one has to fix things, one may not do professional labor on Chol HaMoed, and therefore the average person could sew something that got torn and is needed for Chol HaMoed, but the professional, the tailor, has to make sure to make it look unprofessional. And we saw different opinions about what one can do with the strings of the bit. And the last Mishnah we just saw is that we could set up the oven, and the different types of oven on Chol HaMoed, and Rabbi Yehuda says we cannot chisel out the rechaim, the board with which we grind things. Good morning.